listening to Not So Light from Asteroid G, asking, is that a golden gun in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey, your buddy Mike the Ghoul here, gonna sing a little Paul McCartney, live and let die, or Axl Rose. Which version do you like?
Neither.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
No. I like this song. I like the song Live and Let Die. No.
I mean, it was fine in the context of the movie that we're about to discuss, but Wings or Axl Rose, meh, whatever.
Okay, fair enough. So, I think it's a classic.
I know you do. We are talking about the first two Roger Moore movies, which are really weird for me, because I want to take a step back for a second. Sean Connery did his movies, and it was very definitely an evolution, and we got settled into a formula. Yep. George Lazenby came in, did one movie, completely different kind of Bond affair, was great in my opinion, one of the best. And then Connery's lured back and does another Connery-style movie. You would think, because Lazenby got to do his own thing, that when we move on to the Roger Moore era, we'd get something a little different, something a little more Roger Moore. And all it really feels like is they had a script for a Sean Connery movie, and they just gave it to Roger Moore, like, just do what he was doing, it's fine. And then that basically defines the Roger Moore era. Do what Sean Connery was doing, but sillier.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah.
I was surprised. I like The Man with the Golden Gun.
It's okay.
I like the bad guy.
Yes, Christopher Lee is great in that one.
Christopher Lee is very good in that one. Really, like, as we're watching these through, every week when we talk about it, I come back to, like, wow, like, this was not as good as I remember. And it literally is just, like, it's just Sean Connery in a different skin.
It is.
What movie was he doing at the time is what I'm wondering right now.
They wrote another movie and they were trying to lure Sean Connery back. And I think his exact thing was, there are two things in life I want to own, like a library and a bank. And I already have the library and I'm most of the way to a bank. I don't need to make another one. So, like, and you know, good for him. He knows what he wanted. That's fine. It does really feel like they were just almost like they were trying to make another You Only Live Twice, but with a blaxploitation setting for Connery. And when Connery didn't show up, they're like, well, we'll just slap this other British dude in there.
Yeah, you know, a rose by any other name still be a rose.
So Live and Let Die follows the new Bond, same as the old Bond, Roger Moore, who is called in because three British agents are killed. And that leads to a drug running operation, very confusingly, with a mob boss named Kananga and a street level dealer named Mr. Big, who, spoilers, are the same person with just the makeup. It's not even really good looking makeup when you actually see it. So Bond ends up going and investigating Harlem and then New Orleans, because that's the places that Mr. Big is operating out of. And functionally, all we seem to get is a very bad blaxploitation movie that just kind of wanders around for a bit and then peters out while it tries to do the same old Bond story again.
Yeah, you know, these old Bond movies, just they got a twinge of misogyny and a touch of racism to it, you know,
and they
like
just spin. They just spin. Yeah.
Credit the actors for being okay to do some of the things they do. It gets rough at some points because, like, we're past a time where that's normal, and it's weird to see it come off as normal.
Yeah,
so some of the stuff they do, but it's a movie. I get it. But it's still strange, even just the fact that this is what? It's a 50-year-old movie, 53 years old. It's not that long ago.
No. But interesting, because Live and Let Die, speaking on that Connery subject, definitely is in that mold of a Connery film, which is Bond is called in to do something, and then he just kind of wanders around for an hour and a half until suddenly we get to the climax and the movie resolves itself.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's taking virginity, he's walking around, he's doing his thing, you know.
We're gonna get on that, but this is definitely a Bond wanders for 2 hours film, and I've seen enough of these from Connery. I would have liked something a little different from Roger Moore. We'll get that next, but this one feels like it's the tail end of the Connery era, and Roger Moore is just there for some reason going through the motions.
No.
Doesn't start his era on a high note, that's for certain.
No, it does not. But we do get a little bit better as we move along.
For a bit.
But the movie, like, he was kind of like just that Travolta meme throughout a lot of the movie, just wandering around, like, you know,
confused,
doing whatever.
What am I doing here?
And
really, what am I doing here is such an apt way of describing this, because as I wrote in my notes about this one, because I really hated this movie. I wrote so many notes for this. I hated this movie.
I'm looking at it like you were going. I was like, wow, he's got feels about this movie.
Despite how white I am, I actually really like the blaxploitation genre. I've watched a lot of those films. There's campiness to it, but it also really suits a specific era. And there are tropes to that era that work really well for those films. But a key of the blaxploitation era film is that white guys are never the main character.
Right.
You got black guys as both the villains and the heroes, and it's their like society fighting against itself that's a key part of many of these stories. And the white guy that comes in is usually an obstructing force or something that shakes things up and forces the real heroes to recalibrate what they're doing. Here, what you have is a blaxploitation movie with a white guy wandering around the lead role and a white girl as his primary Bond girl. And you're sitting there going, what movie am I watching?
A confusion of identity for sure.
Yeah, this movie would have made way more sense with a black Bond and a black Bond girl, because then it actually kind of would have worked a little better. Not great, but a little better. Roger Moore seems lost in this, sitting there going, well, I guess I'll just do something.
Not the best start to the Roger Moore era. Some blaxploitation films, they do it really well. Like Blackula. That's a good, like you've talked about before. I am a huge fan of Undercover Brother. Like, I think that movie is fantastically done.
Yes.
And things like Pootie Tang, like movies like that, that like know what they are and they're there to make you laugh and take themselves not so seriously. With a Bond movie like this, it just gets confusing with the tone. It just doesn't track for me.
No, this one was just so confusing. So let's go over the notes, because there's some stuff I do want to touch upon. Roger Moore, despite how bad this movie is, actually isn't bad. He in the role is really, he's got this suaveness, he's got this debonair attitude. Everything just kind of rolls off of him, no matter how silly it gets. He's just like there. And I kind of liked that about him. He's not bad. I think the issue with his movies is that they suck and they have a good Bond in the center of them.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
No.
And his barrel sequence is competent. He looks better than Connery shooting a gun.
Yeah, Connery just like flailed the gun around in the most obvious, I'm going to get shot before I even get it halfway around my body. It's not as smooth as like Craig is. Craig like pulls it and it's automatically out. But Moore at least like looks like he knows what a gun is supposed to feel like, you know?
I'm sure he's probably, he looks like he's at least held one before.
Once.
You know?
Yeah, it's not a prop. Yeah. He knows how to handle a gun a little bit. So this is the gimmicky era of Bond. We kind of got that start with Connery in You Only Live Twice, where they were trying to do like Asian exploitation, and now we have blaxploitation. And Roger Moore doesn't get to start with a normal adventure. He's always getting thrown into some wacky situation. I did like, there's a sequence early on where Bond is dealing with a girl, and like that's at his house, the girl from a previous adventure we didn't see. He slides her zipper down, and then we cut to a shot of a plane taking off. And I'm like, subtle, guys. Way to imply the erection there.
I know, right? But I mean, it was pretty cool, right? With the magnet and everything. Yeah. It was pretty slick, like going like that.
Yeah.
And then
like okay. Ah, I see what you did there.
He just got laid.
He did. He got it up.
No need for Viagra on this man.
Nope. Solitaire. That's the main Bond girl. Because we actually have a side Bond girl who shows up, but she doesn't last very long, even though she's the black girl that should be in this movie. Solitaire, played by Dr. Quinn, medicine intern, because she's so young here.
No, right?
She tells tarot off of a deck of cards, which is weird on its own because she's not really telling tarot. But the cards have 007 printed on the back of them. I'm like, does James Bond have his own merch? It's one of those
space balls, the flamethrower.
It's like that. It's like, why does James Bond's number show up on the back of playing cards? Like, what is MI6 doing? Are they that hard up for money to fund themselves? This is very silly.
The secret's out, I guess.
Yeah.
007, right? All right.
Yeah. It's a standard blaxploitation, even with a white guy in the role, is every once in a while we just got to cut away to musical numbers for no reason. They don't add anything, they just pad the movie, but we got to do it. Gotta do it more than once. Once he's actually finally on the trail of Kananga, the bad guys try to kill Bond in his hotel room with a snake. We already saw from Dr. No, trying to kill Bond with a spider didn't work, and the snake is not any better.
No, it's not. I mean, it's just, you can't even send a human to kill this man. Like, I don't get it.
No.
It's silly. It's just silly.
While he's on the island, Quarrel Jr. shows up, which really makes me question everything. So if Bond is the same character from the Sean Connery era, which Roger Moore is playing, like he's not acting like there's anything weird about hanging out with Quarrel Jr. or that he's a different guy. But Quarrel Jr. looks the same age as Quarrel was in the first movie. And Bond is now back to being like in his 30s like he was in the first. I'm starting to really get confused over the continuity here.
It's something that it feels like they just forgot about. Like it's a really odd choice of casting. And like Bond always does have that like little sidekick in the movie. He's always got that that American, you know, yeehaw with him. And it's just, it's interesting that you would say, you know, Junior like that. I don't know, maybe it's a code name too or something. Like it was a weird choice.
It was so strange. But Quarrel is as useless as the Bond girls this time, because Jane Seymour is really just there to get captured and flip cards, while Rosie, the black girl Bond girl, she is a nothing character who shows up, supposedly double crosses James Bond once, and then dies 5 minutes after she's introduced. And you're sitting there going, why was she even in this movie? You could extract her from it, and nothing about the film is lost.
They do this in Bond movies sometimes really strangely. You know, they did it with From Russia with Love, you know, with the girl, like, oh, here comes another Bond. No, she's dead. Just like that, got hit with a hat and it was over. Like, it's just, it's weird the choices they make. Like, it's almost like they try to have it where there's some stakes to it that shows the danger of the job, but it just comes off as lazy writing to me.
It does. It does when they don't invest in the character enough for you to really care, and then they bump her off almost immediately. It does nothing for you.
No, it just pads the body count is all it is. And it it's a Bond movie. It's not about the body count at this time, but whatever.
I'm sure they hired Moore because he was British and he could bring that presence, which he does. But Moore is also in his 40s here. So they've already hired a guy that is going to age out of the role very quickly, which is a little weird. And then they put him up against Dr. Quinn, medicine intern, who's in her 20s. And it felt real icky, just the age gap there. And I know Roger Moore actually commented on this on later movies where he was in his mid-50s and they were putting him up against 20-year-old actresses. And he's like, I can't perform this romance the way you want me to because I feel like I'm her father at this point.
Yeah.
Kind of the energy I got here. Like, he's doing it because it's part of his job, but Moore just wasn't in it with this.
No, it's awkward, right? It's just, it is very awkward. You know, he's a secret agent. He's supposed to get laid and all that, but like the age gap difference is so noticeable. Like, it just feels like insert word here that gets you demonetized. You know, it just feels that
a little, esutory. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say the word, but you know where I'm going with it.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, totally. I totally get it. You put this 5 years previously, and Bond is spending time in prison for this relationship. It doesn't. It doesn't work for me. And then to make matters worse, A, he steals her virginity, which is real wrong. And then B, because of that, she loses all of her predicting powers. And basically Bond after this gets to move on with his life, and her life is just completely ruined.
Like, not a care in the world. Like, I guess he's gonna keep her as a friend or a pet. I don't know, maybe he can find a room for her somewhere.
What is she going to do? She doesn't even have her medical degree yet. She can't be medicine woman. Like, come on.
No, she cannot. Yeah, she's quite a ways away from being able to do that, apparently.
No, and I think the piece de resistance on this creepy factor to get in her pants so they can bone down, Bond does it with a stacked deck and cheats just so he can screw this girl. That was a strong Connery move right there.
It was. It just felt gross. It felt icky.
It's so bad. So bad. Yeah. So on that island base for Kananga in San Monique, the sets are so fake. Like, they don't even look like just bad stage sets. They look like a Disney theme park version of a voodoo set. I was like, did you spend all your money before now and you guys had like $5 and some construction paper? What are we doing here?
I mean, this movie was a $7 million budget, and boy, they spent every bit of that.
Did they? I don't know about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, right? Like,
And then we get into the action of this movie, which is just even worse. There's a lack of energy to the action. The car chase early in the movie wasn't great. The bus chase on San Monique is tedious. There's a plane chase that isn't good, like as he's just kind of rolling around an airport in loops, and it makes no sense. Like, you're in a plane. Get in the air. Why are we not flying away? Then he trapped at the drug runner's base in the middle of the swamp and literally runs across crocodiles like he's playing Pitfall. A stupid little jingle plays while he does it, and you're like, what are we what are we doing here?
I mean, it felt like Frogger or something, yeah. Right? Like, it was just so weird.
So
like,
weird.
I'm suspending my disbelief, but like, come on, man. Yeah. Like,
and all of this to lead up to a decent boat chase that would be really good if we didn't keep cutting away from it to go check in with this Southern sheriff that I don't care anything about, and he did not need to be in this movie.
No, like, he's another one of those goofy Americans that shows up in a couple of Bond movies, and you're just like, why?
Why are you?
Is this
why
what
are
you we... think of us?
If this was a blaxploitation movie, the sheriff would be the antagonist, like a side antagonist, pursuing the hero across the city, trying to catch him and like having wacky ants before we cut back to the real action. But he makes no sense here in an actual Bond movie.
No, he adds nothing to the story, and it's just a confusing, it's like somebody's buddy that got into the movie. I don't know.
Yep. Speaking of those dances that we talked about earlier, there's the voodoo dance that acts as the climax of the film, and it just goes on forever. That then leads to a fight with Roger Moore, where he's supposed to be punching and kicking guys, and it's laughably bad, like William Shatner could do it better. Like, it's bad stage fighting. All of it leading to a confrontation with Kananga, where he literally blows up like a balloon and explodes.
Very odd choice. Yeah, Fat Kodo is a pretty solid actor. You know, he was in the original Alien. I thought he did okay in this as the bad guy, but like, I mean,
he wasn't given much to do except stand around. No.
Yeah, you know, they do some weird resolutions of Bond fights here and there, but like this was an odd one.
Yeah.
It was definitely weird.
Now, the last note I had was this movie was dreadful. And it was.
Yeah.
Halfway in, I was checked out and the movie just kept going.
It did. It's a 2 hours. It felt longer than that.
Yeah,
sure did feel longer than that.
Interminable. Yeah. This wasn't the worst movie I saw this week because I did see Lee Cronin's The Mummy, but it's up there.
This was not a fun watch experience. The next one we're going to chat about, The Man with the Golden Gun, moderately better, and through no fault of Yaphet Kotto as Kananga in this movie, a better villain, at least that we get in the next one.
Before we get into the next half of this podcast, we do want to thank this week's sponsor, OCP, Omni Consumer Products, making the products that fuel your life. Thank you for sponsoring this podcast. From Roger Moore's first dreadful movie, we then get into one that's honestly probably should have been the start of his era. You can watch these in any order, it doesn't matter. The Roger Moore movies have no connective tissue to them, really. Not least until we get to Jaws. But we get a movie that is decent. If you compare it to what we've had so far, it's actually one of the better Bond movies. Not the best. We've gotten way better than this. Goldfinger and Honor Her Majesty's Secret Service are better than this movie.
Right, but they are.
It's decent for the era. It definitely gets blown out of the water by later entries, though, because it's still uneven and not great. We're talking about The Man with the Golden Gun, which is powered in large part by a really good villain and a plot that is at least somewhat less meandery.
It's true. And Christopher Lee, as the famed crackshot hitman Francesco Scaramanga, did a really great job as the villain in this movie. You know, never misses. The Man with the Golden Gun. If you played Bond on 64 back in the day, GoldenEye, like, you know, when you had the four people playing with the Golden Gun, one shot kills, like, it's just, it came from this movie. And, like, it was a good movie. But, like you said, we get better. But this one was at least passable for me.
It was passable. It's passable. It's not great. Like, there are problems with this movie that we'll go over as we cover the notes, but it has a decent structure to it. Bond is called in because supposedly the man with the golden gun, Scaramanga, is planning to kill him. And he does this by sending everyone a golden bullet as their warning. And then at some point, just mysteriously, they die. So Bond is told he can't work on any cases at this point because at any point, Scaramanga could show up and try and kill him, and it would ruin whatever he's working on. In response, Bond decides to go and investigate for Scaramanga and actually, like, solve this case and prevent his own assassination so he can go back to being the world's most famous secret agent, which he is, because the villain actually has a wax figure of him in his fortress, and you're sitting there going, man, Bond, you suck at being secret.
He is not the international man of mystery that Austin Powers is, that's for sure.
it's just so bad. Yeah. So he goes on this quest to find it, and then halfway into the movie, we discover, oh wait, Scaramanga didn't send this to him. That was actually a bait and switch. But now while you're here, Bond, go investigate this whole solar energy thing that we're doing. And that suddenly becomes the plot. But not really, because all it really is still Bond chasing after Scaramanga, and then they have a fight, and hooray. The plot feels a little patched together here, But it works because you have Christopher Lee playing a very charismatic villain. If you slapped a different villain in here, like if you made this just yet another Spectre one with a bad version of Blofeld, this movie wouldn't work. Christopher Lee playing off of Roger Moore and Roger Moore playing off of Christopher Lee, they power the scenes of this movie.
Yeah, agreed. They had good chemistry. This was the dynamic that you were hoping for with Bond and Blofeld and other instances where we didn't get it. Like, this was very much Bond and Goldfinger kind of back and forth.
Cat
and
mouse.
You got like, it felt good. Yeah,
it did. It's kind of weird. It kind of takes a while to get going. Then it has to recalibrate itself because effectively the movie reboots itself 40 minutes in. But for all of those flaws, it is at least watchable. I remembered from my first time through the series a few years back, I didn't hate this one. I was actually shocked that I vaguely enjoyed a Roger Moore movie. But knowing where the series goes, this is definitely a midpoint and not a high point.
Yeah, agreed, for sure.
Christopher Lee shows up at the start, is instantly a better villain, even though we spend 5 minutes with him and not with Bond, which is always a weird way when these movies start. Let's not pay attention to our main character. Let's go focus on someone for a little while, even though it makes no sense.
They like to set up the villain in the beginning of these movies. You know, we got that with Robert Shaw's character with the Bond fake-out death many movies ago. They like to do that, and it's an interesting thing that these Bond movies do that others don't, and it feels strange. James Bond is the name of the movie. We don't see him for the beginning part of it. It's weird.
He's just not in the first act until a wax figure of him shows up, which is clearly Roger Moore just with a little extra heavy makeup on him. But yeah, it's weird. It's just strange. Scaramanga has an entire funhouse in his estate, along with a solar fusion plant and other stuff. I'm like, okay, I get that you are the supervillain, but you have a base that would make Dr. No cream his pants, and it's very strange.
Right? Like, I mean, the whole funhouse thing, like, I guess that's kind of his shtick, you know, like, you know, never see it coming from around the corner, like the House of Mirrors and all that. But like, the dude's, I guess, not hiding his wealth either.
It's a very strange villain affectation for the sake of just being a affectation. And it's not even feeling like for the love of the game. It's just like he's got a strange MO he's playing at, but it's never explained. It just kind of exists.
Yeah.
The title intro song for this, The Man with the Golden Gun, is awful. It just sucks.
Not a very good one.
No, like, I will take Live and Let Die over this song. This is wretched.
Yeah, some songs are good in the movies. Some are weird. You know, they certainly get better than this one. The song was not very good.
After Bond is told that Scaramanga is chasing after him, M is like, no one knows where he is or what he looks like, so I think he has the edge on you, which implies everyone knows what you look like, Bond, because you're the worst secret agent ever.
Oh my God, right? Like, you know, goodness gracious.
No!
Q, help this man out, please.
Give him a fake face. Do something. You're more well-known than Ethan Hunt. Like, it's real bad.
I mean, you ain't hiding anything. And just don't do yellow face again, please. Goodness please, gracious. No.
I thought the first act of this movie was pretty good, all things considered. It's James Bond actually, like, working a case and trying to solve a mystery and so forth. And if the movie had kept that up, I would have been really invested in it. It's just that at that 40-minute mark, it's then like, you know, actually, this plot doesn't work at all, and we're just going to throw it all away and do something else entirely, making the first act that I enjoyed completely irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was setting up the end of the movie, but it was just, I don't know. It choices in this movie got strange after this point.
We're going to get some strange choices eventually. Oh, yeah.
We're getting there.
There's a long sequence at a karate school for no reason because these people don't show up again. There's no martial arts in the movie past this point. There was no martial arts in the movie before this point. It's just like we're in an Asian country. Let's do a bit of martial arts because we're here, which feels a little racist, but not this movie isn't nearly as racist as You Only Live Twice, for example. But it's very strange that it's here. And then the martial arts on display for it, you know, like if that's the whole point of doing this, it's also bad. So
Muay Thai is not an easy martial arts either, too, and it's very much like that's big in that culture over there. So it almost feels like, you know, a backhand a little bit there. But anyway,
they did not represent it well. Not here. They did later in like an actual fight setting that we see where they're like, there's a whole exchange between Bond and Scaramanga set at a Muay Thai fight, and it was great. But this part here at the karate school was tedious and could have been almost completely removed. I would have been fine. Instead of Bond getting captured by guys and being dropped into karate school so he can get the shit kicked out of him, except it doesn't happen, they could have instead been like, you know, Bond escapes, and we skip all of this, and then we move on to the next plot point. Would have been much better. No.
Would have been.
No,
sure.
Would have been so much better. After this, we go to the Muay Thai fight. Bond is supposed to get the device from Andrea, the Bond girl, except then, for no reason, she's killed off. And Bond doesn't really get the device. He kind of does, but he kind of doesn't. And the Scaramanga gets it back. And we get one of two sequences with the sheriff from the previous movie for some reason being here in this Asian country for, like, no reason. He's just here because people liked him from the previous one, which I didn't.
I guess, right? Like, he just happens to be vacationing in this exact spot. Like, it just... I mean, he's a better secret agent than Bond, apparently. Right. They didn't know he was there.
He's going around being JW, but no one pays attention because he's obnoxious as fuck.
I guess, right?
And he makes even less sense in here because he's being racist for no reason in a movie that isn't even trying to highlight that, like a blaxploitation war. He's just a funny character, which he's not. And the second he exits the film, the movie gets better.
Yeah, he doesn't add any value. It's all, like, again, it's like he's somebody's buddy and needed a few bucks. Like, he adds nothing to the movie.
Let's slap JW in here. I think this is the last time he shows up, which, thank God. But, oh my God. The chase sequence is kind of okay. It's a little low energy, but it's kind of fine. And then it gets a decent car jump, which I would like in the moment if it didn't also add a slide whistle.
My gosh, right?
Like, yeah, like the jump is good. Effect? The slide whistle ruins it. It's again Roger Moore's. Yeah, Roger Moore's films can't do anything without being silly and over the top. Octopussy has the clown makeup, which everyone hates. Octopussy is not the problem. It's just a symptom of the problem of these producers felt the Roger Moore movies had to be silly.
Yeah. Campy. Definitely campy.
Very, very campy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. But at least we do get a decent final battle with Scaramanga at his base. The cat and mouse in his fun house and Bond actually pulling a fast one on Scaramanga to defeat the villain. I liked all that. I thought that was good. I thought we could have extracted like 45 minutes from this movie easily and just gone from first act to Scaramanga's base and nothing else would matter. The whole villain plan about the solar energy plant is nothing. Mm. It's just a villain plan for the sake of he needs to be making money, but it doesn't do anything. We could extract all of that from the plot and basically you just still have Bond needs to fight Scaramanga. Bond goes and fights Scaramanga. Case closed.
Essentially, right? Like all it is just Bond fighting a villain that self-sustains by doing something evil that makes no sense. Like we got this from Goldfinger done better.
Yeah, they were writing the movie of Bond being chased by Scaramanga. And then 40 minutes in, they're like, wait, that's not an evil villain plan. We can't do a movie like this without an evil villain plan. But the movie was better when it was just Bond trying to outrun an assassin. That was a story we hadn't gotten before. 40 minutes in, it becomes a story we've already seen countless times before. And it's so much worse for the wear afterwards.
It really is. You know, sometimes these movies, they start taking turns and you're like, oh, we're getting something different. And then just right back to the formula, which works sometimes. But like, you had something interesting going here.
Yeah. So it's not a complete waste of Christopher Lee. It's not a complete waste of his villain, but it is definitely a, we have a formula and no matter what interesting things we do at the start of the film, we've got to go back to formula every time. Like, you know, Oscorp, got to go back to formula. And by going back to formula, you just ruin what was working. Oh, well, Mammoth Golden Gun is better than Live and Let Die. Neither of them are fantastic, but at least this is one that I could see watching again if I decide to go back and watch all the Bonds at some point. I'll go from Goldfinger to On Her Majesty's Secret Service to this and skip half the other films.
It's funny, right? Like, when we're done with this, we should do that. Let's give an abridged Bond watching. Like, hey, you can cut all the, you can trim all the fat in here and just watch these good ones.
what ones do you need? Because right now, I think it's actually four movies because you should probably watch Dr. No. Just because that's the start. Probably. But yeah,
I think this is the fourth one. Yeah.
Four essential movies out of what? We're almost up to 10 now at this point.
I think we're about 10. Yeah. 8 or 10 for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So half the movies can just be ignored completely because they don't add anything and you don't care.
No, you don't. And we get a little knickknack. We get like the side henchman, clearly the inspiration for Mini-Me.
Yes.
We're getting things that feel Austin Powers when Austin Powers did it better.
Much better. Much better.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully at some point we'll get another decent Roger Moore movie. I don't know if it's going to be the next couple, though.
Well, you know, we got six more in the hopper, so.
You just deeply pained me with that. So we are going to get The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. And you like Moonraker, I like The Spy Who Loved Me. So it's going to be interesting going over those two.
Yeah, I like Moonraker because I like Jaws. I like him as a villain. We'll watch those and we'll cover that when we do. But yeah, strap in, folks. We're in for
a long
the 70s. The 70s were a wild time.
Yeah, we're gonna be all over the place for a bit until we finally get to the Dalton era, and it's gonna be all over the place.
Yeah. So yep. Hang on, strap in, kids.
We're in for one now. This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, picking up our golden gun and putting down our clown makeup. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy, Mike the Ghoul, getting lost in his own house of horrors. it's a fun time this week, guys.
We will see you all next time.